I'm Leslie Wise, and this is a continuation of Ethics and Jurisprudence. We've been discussing the elements of malpractice and a few of the legal concepts surrounding malpractice. Want to actually talk about a malpractice trial now and discuss what would happen, what are some of the steps of the legal proceedings that would occur in a malpractice action. Most of you have seen enough court TV or movies concerning courtroom situations to be familiar with the basics of courtroom procedure. There are a few little intricacies that you may not know, and you wouldn't know unless you were actually in the court. I'm hoping that not too many of you have been sued and you haven't seen the inside of a courtroom very often. How do you know that you're being sued for malpractice? How would you know? What's the first indicator? Now, a lot of chiropractors who have been sued for malpractice tell me that they sort of felt like something was up. They had some suspicions before they ever got any official documents. The patient was acting funny, or they got some indicators that perhaps something was up. Here are some of the indicators: is that maybe a patient acts disgruntled. The patient is asking a lot of unusual questions, or the patient is confronting you in some way and acting as if they're dissatisfied with your care, and they're confronting you in that way. And you may have a hint at that point, and you know, all you can do is be nice, and there's not a lot to do. The actual first sign that you may be being sued is that you would probably receive a request for information from the patient's attorney, and you would receive a signed by the patient piece of paper, a request saying, please send all records of this patient to this attorney, and the patient signs that, and it may not give you any hint as to why that's the case. If a patient requests that you send all their records to an attorney, then you need to do it. So what we would generally do in that case is you copy the records, you send Xerox copies, not the originals, of your entire file. In fact, they probably would ask for every piece of paper, everything in your file. They may wish to see the x-rays sometimes. They will ask. And in that case, you send everything you have. The patient has permitted it, the patient has requested it, and we're trying to satisfy the patient here. So all the records go off to the attorney. The attorney would review your records and obviously has already spoken to the patient and has the patient's side of the story. And through the records, we'll be determining your side of the story. Probably your records are going to be reviewed by a potential expert witness. The lawyer will probably take your records or send your records to a potential expert witness for review. They're going to ask the expert witness a couple of questions. Are these, from reviewing the records, did it appear that there is any reason for action here? Is there anything lacking in these records that maybe should have been done? Given the patient's complaints and the patient's status, did the doctor do the right thing? Okay, that's the question that's being asked to the expert witness. If that expert witness says, gee, everything's in order, the doctor appeared to do all the right things, guess what? The attorney may have another expert witness review them. They're looking for a plaintiff's witness, a plaintiff's expert witness, who will agree with the plaintiff that you did something wrong. And remember that the lawyer already knows the law. He knows that there are four points to the law of malpractice. He's going to have to determine, was there a duty to perform adequately? Was there negligence? Was there injury? And was there causal connection between the negligence and the injury? So the patient, is, the attorney knows that, and he's going to be weighing what the attorney, the expert witness says, again, and what the patient says, thinking of all those four parts of the malpractice law. And most commonly, they're looking at the negligence part here to find if they can determine that you should have done something that you didn't do, like maybe send the patient out for an MRI, like maybe refer to another doctor or some other diagnostic procedure that should have been done. And if you didn't do that, they may determine that you're negligent. If they can determine through other medical records that the patient was in fact injured, the idea here is that the patient must have already seen another chiropractor or another medical person or another healing arts practitioner of some sort who says, yes, you have an injury. And that injury is documented. We can document it with x-rays, lab work, surgical reports, whatever is necessary. So we have evidence of injury, we have evidence of negligence, and then all we have to do is tie together the two. And so the attorney would take those records and have them reviewed. If they can't pin anything on you, if they say everything is fine, the records are good, there is no indication of malpractice, then chances are that's the last you're ever going to hear of it. The records were requested, that's it. If, in fact, the expert witness in reviewing the records finds some shortcomings and says, well, you should have done this, this, and this, you didn't do it, then you're probably the next thing you're going to hear would be you're going to be served a complaint. You will actually be served a lawsuit document that says you are being sued, a cause of action. And that is a document that you receive. Someone has to bring it to you and serve it to you. In South Carolina, we use to serve subpoenas and serve papers, we use off-duty sheriff's deputies. They have weapons. And one of the reasons that they have weapons is that people tend to get a little irritated when they get served a subpoena or they get sued. And sometimes they lash out, sometimes violently. And if the person who is serving the papers happens to be unarmed, you may get thrown down the stairs or something. So off-duty deputies do that. They're paid a fee, $50 for delivering a subpoena or something. And so you would probably walk into your waiting room and there's a sheriff's deputy who says, are you Dr. Jones? And you say, yes. And they say, you are being served. And they hand you a document. Once you have been handed that document that says you're being sued, it's the cause of action. What you receive there is the complaint. It's a document called the complaint. And it means that the lawyer has drawn up papers, a pretty long verbal laying out of all the causes of action. And the causes of action may be that the patient was injured by your negligence. That would be one of the causes of action. They will state what you should have done and what you didn't do and what supposedly came out of that. The patient suffered medical bills and surgery and pain and suffering and mental trauma and anguish and etc. They will list all these things, stating that it's all your fault, and that's called the complaint. Now, before that actually got to you, that was drawn up by an attorney. It was registered, filed in a court of jurisdiction. In this particular case, usually in any given location, there is an administrative judge. And the administrative judge looks over these kinds of cases. The clerk of court registers it, gives it a number, a file number. It is now an official case. The judge approves it. And then it gets served to you. So they bring it to your office. So it's been through the court system a bit before you. Once you get it, it will give you a time period for responding to the complaint. Usually it's 30 days. And you cannot ignore these things. This is the commencement of a legal action, and you can't ignore it from this point. Once you have been served, it's in your hands. You must now defend yourself. You cannot avoid defending yourself. So basically, this paper will tell you why you're being sued, and it's going to tell you have 30 days to answer this. And so what that means now is you have to go get a lawyer. And you get a lawyer, and your lawyer will draw up a document that is an answer. That basically says, I didn't do that, and no, I didn't. And that document goes back to the court. That document, through the court, will get back to the plaintiff, the other side. And they're going to review your answer. And at this point, if you had very good answers, something like, you must be mistaken, I've never heard of you, and besides, I was in the Bahamas on the date you said the injury took place, and if you could somehow document that this case is totally bogus, I suppose the case could be called off at this point. But so if you receive the document, then you're going to have to answer, and you, by your answer, a judge would be looking this over, kind of supervising the case. Usually there would be one other document. It's called a reply. That is from the plaintiff, and the plaintiff gets to file another shot at you, saying, well, you answered this, but that's not a good enough answer. We have the following evidence. And so basically in the complaint, they say, you did this, 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 and this. And in the answer, you say, no, I didn't. And in the reply, they say, yes, you did. And there are three pieces of paper, three documents that are the core of the legal system. The complaint, the answer, and the reply. Those three pieces of paper will determine the issues in this lawsuit. From this point forward, you can't come in later bringing in new causes of action and new complaints and making up new things. The actual decisive elements and issues of the lawsuit are set in these three documents. You can't change them much after this point. So once those three documents are in, the lawsuit has begun. What very often happens here is at the end of these three documents, there would be some sort of meeting of the parties, of the person being sued and the person doing the suing, their attorneys, and maybe a judge. A sort of a pre-trial hearing of some sort, and a pre-trial meeting. And at this point, the parties get together with a judge mediating, and the judge probably says, does anybody want to make an offer? Is there any sort of settlement issue here? If you want to settle this case, let's hear. Let's make some offers. And so at this point, there may be a release and satisfaction offer and award, and maybe they take it, and the case is over. That's it. It never gets into the actual litigation process. You've been sued, you've paid it off, and it's out of the system. And a lot of people don't mind paying off a suit at this point just to get rid of it, so that you don't have bad publicity, you don't have to go through all the trauma and drama of a big trial. So the case may be settled at this point. If it doesn't settle at this point, if the two parties are standing off at this point saying, I will show you in court, then chances are it's going to go to court. So what happens at this point? Both sides ask from the judge and usually receive permission to enter into what is called pretrial discovery. Pretrial discovery is the formal investigative stage of litigation. Now that the lawsuit has been filed, both parties have the authority to ask for and receive several things. They may say, Your Honor, we would like to have all the papers in this case from the doctor. We already have the actual patient record. We would also like the doctor's tax returns for the last 3 years. We would like a list of the doctor's assets, his profit and loss statement. We would like his appointment book for the last 3 years. We would like a list of all his insurance filings for the last 3 years. We would like his sign-in sheets for the last 3 years. And we would like any piece of paper or any document containing this patient's name. That's a lot of paper. But they may ask for that. The judge may say, so order. We produce it. So the production of documents comes into play. You may ask yourself, why do they want my tax returns? Because they want to know how much money you have, how much money you've been making, what your income has been. Why do they want your net worth? Because they want to know if you're worth suing, and they want to know if you're worth going after financially. So, and they're entitled to have this information at this point. You, on the other hand, may say, I want all the information about this patient, other healthcare records. You know that if they're alleging injury, they must have confirmation of the injury. So you're asking for any other medical records in the case, any other consultations in the case. You want all the papers surrounding this case, any information that you have, your side would ask for. So you ask for documents. That's a number one thing. Documents, you can have cartons and crates of paper and six filing cabinets full of paper and two pickup loads of paper. You ask for it from the other side. They must give it to you. There are no secrets in a litigation process. Everybody knows everything. Everybody gets all the papers. Everybody gets all the documents. So you have a right to ask for and receive any document that you know exists, or you can ask for documents that you don't know they exist and still get them. And the other side is duty bound, honor bound to produce those documents. They can't use them without you knowing about them. Any papers that they're going to use in establishing their case, either side, the other side is entitled to the information. You can't keep secrets. If you do keep a secret, you know, that's a good reason for a mistrial. You may remember in the OJ case, the district attorney's office had some information that they didn't share with the plaintiff's attorneys. And that was a big issue, and there was a move for a mistrial on that basis. So you have to share. You can't keep things secret. So documentation is a big issue.